Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, welcome to Invention. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And Robert, you know what? I am excited today because I feel like this episode of Invention is going to be something that I haven't fully dealt with yet, which is an invention that I can't really find a bad angle on.
Yeah.
But I feel like today we're going to be talking about an invention that I think is just pretty great.
Yeah, we're talking about Braille.
Braille, the writing system based on tactile sensations for people who are blind or otherwise visually impaired. So it's a writing system.
Yeah, it is hard to imagine Braille being used for evil.
Well, I mean, except in the sense that all writing systems could be used for evil. So
well,
I guess
yes, true. You could somebody could write something mean or, you know, outright dangerous in Braille in the same way that one could do that in any form of written communication.
Yes, but I would say as a modification and expansion of an existing writing system, and of course writing comes with all that writing can do, I'd say it's just a good thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't start the fire, right?
They're, right.
It's a continuation of existing written language technology. So whatever was already bad or dangerous in the written word was already there. And,
right.
And this is not necessarily adding anything new to it in that regard.
So written language is something that we might not often think about as an invention, but I think it's actually one of the most important inventions to consider.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this a good bit on Stuff to Blow Your Mind in the past, but what is language but the power to take words and thoughts and fix them in place, to record them and create complex forms out of their structure. And then one can simply come along, read the words, and hear those words in your mind. Think those thoughts for yourself. So when it's crazy to think about this, to sort of deconstruct it and realize that when we read the words of a long dead thinker, we are loading their thoughts into our mind and thinking with their thoughts.
You're going into the matrix. You are uploading their thoughts. I mean, maybe not exactly because you're probably reading across a translation gap and there's something like that. But I mean, reading the words written by another person, I feel like is about as close as you can get to just mind reading.
Yeah, I was thinking about this too with translation the other day. Like, you know, I wonder what are the oldest words that I've read that I can actually, get the gist out of. That's not too archaic in its formation. Certainly something in Old English.
Yeah, passages in Beowulf, ones you can kind of get the sense of.
Yeah. But those are cases where even though there's, maybe a little distortion, a little static from all those centuries of linguistic shift, but you're still feeling those thoughts. You're still thinking those thoughts from another time.
Writing's a time machine.
Exactly. Now, while spoken language is auditory, obviously, written language is a visual system. And for the blind or visually impaired, written language is going to be rather lacking.
Obviously.
Yeah. Just strokes on a page are going to be difficult, if not impossible, to read.
And I would say because education is so often tied up in literacy throughout much of human history in lots of cultures, I think this has led to a kind of unfair and dismissive under-consideration of the role of the education of the blind, because it's like, well, they can't read the written texts we have, so what can we really teach them?
Yeah, it wasn't until 1784 that a school for the blind was established in France, and then the concept spread throughout Europe. But prior to that, I mean, certainly if you go back to the ancient world and prehistoric times, you had sort of the varying levels of importance or attention paid to the blind or visually impaired individuals, especially individuals who were born visually impaired or without the ability to see. If you go back to prehistoric civilizations, and they might have had a practice of disposing of such individuals. Likewise, throughout the ancient world, you see sort of varying treatment. Right, there are times where a blind individual is elevated, that is celebrated. Plenty of other blind or visually impaired individuals who are just simply lost to history. Mm-hmm. But you think about, say, Homer, the famous Greek storyteller. Whether or not this was an actual historic individual, many of the accounts say that he was blind. And so on one hand, if this was an actual blind storyteller, there's a lot to be inferred from that. But then at the same time, there is this tendency in human history to take individuals that that are notable in some sort of disfigurement or a difference in ability, or even something like twins. Mm-hmm. And what they end up being is not really a treatment of individuals with those conditions, but symbols for other people to interpret.
Right.
It's like when you look at movies about twins or stories about twins, it's very often something created by singletons, by individuals who do not have a twin, who are finding something in it, in this situation, to speak to their own identity.
To be a metaphor, yeah. And I think that's exactly correct. I mean, you see characters in you brought up Homer, but I think about like the legendary character of Tiresias, the blind prophet, which I think is very often deployed by sighted people as sort of like a metaphor or a symbol or something like that.
Right. So you see this trend. Without going just really deep into sort of the history of blindness in human societies, but very often the blind were treated as metaphors, and they certainly lacked any kind of like large scale communal experience. Like the blind were not able to come together across cultures and do things like develop their own system of written language. And certainly you didn't have any real efforts to make the sighted world more accessible to sightless individuals. You know, an individual might well be able to depend on a family or a subordinate for aid in reading. And as early as Greek and Roman times, some individuals had access to lenses to aid them in reading. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll have to come back and do a future episode of Invention on that. But while the written word might be tactile in some cases due to the way that it's carved in stone or the way that it's created using a stylus and wax, this was not the primary desired effect of those systems.
Yeah. And now that we live in a modern world where we are aware of the concept of Braille, you might not understand its history or exactly how it was invented or how it works. Hopefully, you will know something about that at the end of this episode. But you're aware of the fact that it exists. Before that, it's hard to imagine that there would not be some kind of widespread reading system within languages for people who are blind or visually impaired. But throughout history, that just generally was the case. But we should also say that Braille, as it's known today, was not the first system of tactily encoding written language for the blind.
That's right. For instance, there was an English system created by Dr. William Moon, invented in 1845, Moontype, which sounds wonderfully elven, you know, like some sort of elven script that comes to life in the moonlight or something. But no, it's just named because that was his last name. But it was basically a font type that is embossed and can be felt. And this wasn't even the first such type. There was Valentine Huy presented a version of this in the 1780s.
Yeah.
And again, the simple concept here is existing fonts like A's, B's, C's, D's that you can trace with your fingers, that you can touch and identify, oh, that's an A, this is a B, this right. is a C, et cetera.
Yeah, Huy's system consisted of these embossed letters, and it was, in fact, somewhat useful for blind students. Like Louis Braille, who we will talk about in this episode as the inventor of Braille, learned to read with Huy's system before he invented Braille, based on another system we'll talk about in a bit. But it was the system of embossed letters where, like, a normal letter, as you're saying, would be pressed through on a damp piece of paper, and it would leave a print there that you could feel with your hand. But it had these real limitations. Like, to hold this size of type, the books of print had to be huge and monstrously heavy. Like, I've seen estimates of an average of 4.5 kilograms or about 10 pounds per book.
Wow.
Which is too heavy to hold and carry around in a practical way, especially for a child who's learning to read. But beyond that, there's just a reality that embossed alphabetic letters are hard to read by touch. And this is something that might not be obvious to sighted readers. You just like look at them and say, well, they look different to me. I can tell the difference. But reading with your fingers is a different type of sensation activity than reading with your eyes is. And it just turned out that for many blind students, there was a lot of ambiguity in the shapes of letters. You could be trying to read across a line. And number one, it wasn't very fast because the letters were big and you had to sort of like feel around on each one. You couldn't just run your finger across a line. But then beyond that, there's ambiguity between letters. Like a C might feel a lot like a G and all that, and it would take you a minute to figure out the difference. And this made reading slow and laborious.
I feel like there's something probably revealing in this journey thus far. You know, we've talked about the roles or the interpretations of blind and vision impaired individuals throughout history. And here with these systems, they do seem like a sighted world first technology.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's blind or vision impaired individuals who will make some of the key breakthroughs here.
That's absolutely right. And at the same time, I don't want to downplay Huy's contribution.
Oh,
like,
no.
This was a real invention, this idea of the embossed letters. It was better than nothing. And I think it's clear that Huy was well-meaning.
Oh, yeah. Because it is easy to take for granted, and speaking here as a sighted individual, to take for granted the degree to which we rely on sight and use that as our key means of interpreting the world.
Uh-huh. But also not to realize how much you're not getting about other people's experiences,
exactly, yeah.
Like if you haven't experienced it yourself.
Yeah. This is certainly an area, as we continue on in the episode, I imagine we have some listeners out there who are blind or are vision impaired in one way, shape, or another. We would love to hear your feedback on Braille, on the experiences we're discussing in this episode.
Totally. And one more thing I just realized about we should mention about the Huy system is I hope I'm saying his name right. I was trying to look up how to pronounce this one. It's H-A-U-Y, and I could not find it. I think it's Huy, but that's my best guess. So if you're a French speaker out there and you're grimacing every time we do this, this won't be the last time in the episode we encounter a difficult French name. So all apologies. But so another thing about his system is that it's probably also easier to use this system if you are an adult who is used to reading printed letters and then lost their sight later on in life and you can feel around on those letters than if you're a child who has never learned to read printed letters and you could perhaps be learning a tactile system that's much easier to pick up from the beginning. But we'll come back to this. I think we should move now to talk about something called night riding. Are you ready for night riding?
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like a 1980s horror film that I could really get into.
Oh, like Night Gallery?
Night Gallery with a little – like Night Gallery meets automatic writing meets a little night cheese in there.
Well, I guess it also – oh, yeah, Working on My Night Cheese. I just know someday we're going to get sued because we do a version of Working on My Night Moves and we're not going to
we're not going to remember to edit it out.
This is night writing. So you might have heard or remember from history classes that the design and tactics of mobile artillery were important to the success of Napoleon's military campaigns in the early 19th century. And Napoleon himself had been an artillery officer when he was coming up through the ranks. And another artillery officer in Napoleon's army would end up playing an important role in the creation of the modern Braille writing system. And this man was Nicolas Marie-Charles Barbier de la Serre, often shortened to just Charles, Charles or Charles Barbier. And one good source I found that included stuff about the life of Charles Barbier was a book called Louis Braille, A Touch of Genius by C. Michael Malore from National Braille Press in 2006. So Barbier was born on May 18th, 1767, and he was born into an aristocratic family, not like galactic scale bigwigs, but like minor bigwigs, medium wigs. And he went to a military school to become an army officer. But then the French Revolution broke out. And he, being the son of a minor aristocratic family, he fled to America and worked there for several years as a surveyor. And while in the United States, supposedly Barbier became very interested in the writing systems that were being used by Native American tribes to create codes for their languages. And Barbier at one point wrote, quote, "Of all the inventions honoring the human spirit, writing has contributed most to its development and progress." So this guy's a fan of the printed word. But Barbier later returned to France and served in the army. And from his interest in the creation of writing systems, which he had sort of gained while he was in the United States, Barbier developed an idea for a code that could be useful in wartime. And this code was called night writing. Now, imagine you're out doing maneuvers under the cover of darkness. Maybe you want to put some mobile artillery in place without the enemy noticing what you're doing in the middle of the night. Now, you want to be able to send a written message from one group or station to another. And normally, if you send a written message during night maneuvers, the person receiving the message would have to light a torch or a lantern in order to read it. But that might give away your position to the enemy if you suddenly light a fire in the middle of a dark battlefield and then maybe some shells come raining down on you. So Barbier's idea was to use a system of holes punched into a piece of cardboard, which could be read in total darkness because you could feel the symbols of the message with your fingers, allowing you to read it without a light and without giving away your position to the enemy. So Barbier's got this great idea. He's like, I'm going to change how night moves are done. He's working on his night moves, and he presents this idea of night riding to the military leadership, but apparently they're just not impressed. And I don't honestly know the reason why they rejected his idea, but if I had to guess, I would think one obstacle would be that this code would take time and effort for people to learn and wouldn't necessarily be worth trying to make everybody learn when you also had the option of just transmitting messages by whisper. In the dark, you could send a human messenger to tell somebody something and they could whisper it in their ear. That probably wouldn't give much away.
Right. And then it also stands to reason that in some cases you would be able to deploy some sort of light and do so in a way that would not necessarily give away your position. And we wouldn't require you to have learned a code and utilize some sort of a punch language.
Yeah, maybe under a blanket or something.
Yeah, like it's an eloquent solution for a problem that maybe did not call for so eloquent a solution.
That's possible. But even though he got rejected – oh, and by the way, Robert, I've included a picture of Barbier here who for some reason just really kind of reminds me of the way Xander Berkeley looks in Terminator 2.
Wait, remind me of which character Xander Berkeley was.
He's John Connor's foster dad. You remember him? He's drinking the milk carton.
Oh, yes, vaguely. Yes, the T-1000 gets him.
Right? Yeah.
The T-1000 gets most people in that movie.
Maybe it's a spurious comparison. I see it. But anyway, Barbier was not finished with the idea of night riding, even though it got rejected by the military. While I would say there are some pretty obvious alternatives to night riding when it comes to transmitting short messages on a darkened battlefield, it becomes a lot harder to come up with ways of like reading longer messages like, say, entire books in the dark. And so by 1815, Barbier had developed another idea. His idea was that the night writing system would be useful to the blind, especially as written by Barbier and quoted in Mellor's book, quote, "to those born blind who are deprived of the means of ever being able to read our books or our writing, and besides this meeting with the greatest difficulties in correctly tracing the outlines of letters." So he knew something about this problem, like the idea that blind people trying to read with embossed letters of a normal alphabetic script faced problems. Like it just wasn't as easy as sighted people thought it should be to feel a letter with your fingers and instantly know what it is.
Certainly. And if you're doubtful of this, the next time you go to, say, a cemetery or you're around some sort of a, you know, statue that you are permitted to touch and paw at, try it out.
Yeah, see how fast you can go.
Yeah, see if you can – how much you can read.
And it turns out Barbier was really onto something here. He created what turned out to be a very important precursor to the later system of Braille, though he is not known as its inventor. That title, of course, goes to its namesake, the namesake of the writing system, Louis Braille. So I think maybe we should take a quick break and then we'll come back to meet Louis Braille.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. So let's talk about Louis Braille, who lived 1809 through 1852. Mm-hmm. So he was a Frenchman, would later grow up to be a French educator. But as a child, at the mere age of three, he was blinded. So what happened is his father was a harness maker, and he'd been playing with tools in his father's shop, mm-hmm. and a tool slipped in his hand and injured his right eye.
Yeah. So this was in the commune of Couvray, and his father, like you said, is like, I think he made saddles and stuff and mm-hmm. harnesses. And so if you're a harness maker, saddle maker, you have to use a sharp tool called an awl to punch holes in tough leather. And apparently young Louis was trying to punch a hole in leather with the awl when he accidentally slipped and he stabbed himself in the right eye. And I've read that the remedy prescribed by a local healer was an infusion of something called lily water. I was looking to try to figure out what this is. I couldn't find a lot of other stuff about it, I assume that might be, I don't know, water that has been soaked with lilies or something. But anyway, it's possible this may have made the risk of infection even worse. The stabbed eye, of course, became infected, and then it got worse.
Yeah, what resulted was something known as sympathetic ophthalmia, which is an infection of both eyes following trauma to a single eye. Mm-hmm. And this ultimately resulted in total blindness.
Yeah, his eyes deteriorated over time, and he was totally blind by five.
And this is particularly devastating when you think about the age at which most of us begin to acquire written language. You mm-hmm. know, to be robbed of your visual faculties at age between the ages of three and five.
Yeah,
that's devastating.
Yeah, and of course, this led to Braille's parents trying to get him enrolled in an institute or a school for blind children, and he eventually was.
Yeah, and as we mentioned earlier, he was lucky enough to have been born in the right time, in the right place, to have access to the earliest school for the blind.
And it was at this institute, the National Institute or the Royal Institute for Blind Children in Paris, where I think it went through some different leadership. Mm-hmm. He first encountered the night writing system of Charles Barbier, though this wouldn't happen until later. Barbier actually approached the Institute multiple times with his invention, and the first time was in 1820. And so I guess we should back up for a second. I don't know how much you came across this, but in a lot of the biographical writing about Louis Braille, there tends to be a kind of villain of the story by the name of Sebastian Gully.
Well, that's a great villain's name.
I guess so. Again, that's one I'm not sure I'm saying right. It's Guillie, Gully, I think. And Gully was head of the Institute when Braille was first enrolled there as a child. And at that time, conditions at the Institute were in many ways just pretty awful. Like, the building was described as damp and poorly ventilated. There was dirty drinking water with few amenities. And Gully apparently had a very prejudiced and condescending view toward the blind children that he was supposed to educate. As quoted in Millard's book, Gully wrote in 1818 that he believed, quote, "It has been clearly shown that the blind are not like other people, susceptible to being restrained by external demonstrations. The blind appreciate things only by extremes and can understand justice only by its effects. A paternal and just management has thus replaced the flexible and weak regime that has for so long prevented good from being done."
All right, so that sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And it continues, a pre-existing trend of treating the disabled as something less than human in some cases, or at least as a secondary class.
Yes, absolutely. And this did appear to be Gilly's view. So he enacted harsh punishments on the children, including putting them on a diet of dry bread and water, with physical beatings or whippings, confinement, in some extreme cases even chaining children to a post. And many of the children in the school, when new leadership came to power, they were later found to be malnourished and in poor health. There's an extremely hard-to-read and egregious case where Gilly actually performed medical experiments on his blind students. So there was one case where he took fluid from the eyes of children suffering from a form of blepharoblenorrhea, which is an eye infection resulting in discharge from the eyes, and he put it into the eyes of four blind children under his care at the school in order to test how it was transmitted. And his reasoning was that because they were already blind, there would not be risk of them losing their sight from the infection, though the records of the experiment indicate that the infection was extremely painful to the children. It's a horrible story. But day to day at the school, the students were taught to do things like weaving and tactile manual tasks, weaving straw and rush mats, and doing other kinds of jobs like that. But they also had opportunities to learn and perform music, which Braille actually excelled at. He was said to be an extremely talented musician.
So this is the guy that was in charge when Barbier first brought his night writing to the school.
Yeah. So Barbier first shows up at the school in 1820, and he tries to demonstrate to Gilly how a variation on the night writing system could be a useful alternative to the embossed print system that the students were using. And he showed off a writing device that he'd created that consisted of a type of slate and a stylus. And Gilly allowed the students to experiment with this briefly, but personally, he did not seem to see much use in the system, and he passed on it. But soon after that, Gilly was dismissed from his position at the head of the institute after it was exposed that he'd had an affair with a much younger instructor at the school. And Gilly's replacement, a man named André or Alexandre Pinier, who is generally regarded as having been a kinder director with a more genuine concern for the well-being of the students, he was put in place, and Barbier returned to make his case again. And fortunately, I think Pinier recognized that the best judge of what kind of writing system would be useful to the blind students would be the students themselves. So he sponsored a period in which the students could experiment with Barbier's dot-based system of night writing. And the students almost immediately recognized the superiority of the dot-based system over the system of the embossed print letters. The dots were simply much easier to read and to reproduce, given the help of a slate and a stylus, than the shapes of the print letters. And of course, one of the students who participated in this experiment was the young Louis Braille, still a teenager at the time. Actually, I think at the beginning, he wasn't even a teenager yet. And so Braille had excelled as a student at the Institute. He was said to be very clever and avid learner, and he had mastered the old Huy system of the embossed letters and had read all the books. And he eventually moved on to teaching other students there.
And so Braille saw the potential for a system like night writing or something related to it. So what he did is he simplified Barbier's night writing system to make it faster to read and write,
yes,
creating the Braille system. And he revealed the system in 1824, and he also later adapted it to a musical notation.
Exactly. And so though the idea of the raised dots to represent sounds or letters came from Barbier, Braille completely reorganized the code system to make it much more practical. Original Barbier system had been these cells composed of 12 possible dots that could, be arranged to show the different letters. And while this cell was easier to read than an embossed alphabetic letter like in Huy's system, it was still too large to read very quickly. And so what Braille did is he simplified the letter system, the cell, to just 6 dots, which could fit under a single fingertip and allow much faster reading. And one crazy thing to think about is that Braille was only 15 or 16 when he finished creating this code.
Oh, wow. Well, let's take another break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss the invention of Braille itself and its legacy.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. So, we've alluded to this already, but let's take a minute to discuss what Braille exactly is. It is a tactile system of written language. It's a way to read the written word via raised dots on a surface with your fingers. And this is, of course, ideal for individuals who are blind or vision impaired.
Mm-hmm.
Braille, however, is not a language.
Yes, and that's important. It's much the same way that the alphabet is not a language. Mm-hmm. Alphabets are ways of encoding existing languages, and so is Braille.
Yeah, it's a code that's been adapted to many existing languages since the original French. For instance, there's English Braille or Grade 2 Braille, and this consists of 250 different marks representing letters, numbers, punctuation marks, formatting marks, contractions, and abbreviations. Each Braille symbol is formed via Braille cells, each with spaces for six raised dots. So a full Braille cell contains six raised dots and two parallel rows of three dots each.
You've probably seen them before, but they look kind of like, you know, they can sort of resemble like dominoes or the sides of a die.
Yeah, imagine a domino with space for only six dots, again, in two vertical rows of three.
And of course, as you mentioned, there are different forms of Braille.
Right. So first, let's consider the most basic form, what's generally referred to as uncontracted Braille. This is helpful for beginners learning Braille, for instance. Mm-hmm. So if you have in this system, if you have a phrase and you want to spell it out, you spell it out letter by letter. So you would, you know, if you're writing, you know, and then it came to pass, you would do A, then you would do N, then you would do D, and you would just spell out every word in this sentence.
But there are, of course, many words in the English language that are usually just read as sort of units. You don't have to go one letter at a time, right?
Yeah, you think of sight words, for instance, you know, words where you just look at it and you know it. And so this is where we get into contracted Braille, in which some 180 different letter contractions come into play to shorten and simplify everything, making it, again, faster to read and easier to write.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I know some of you who have listened to past episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind that deal with the Mandarin language, or particularly the Chinese typewriter, you might be asking yourself, huh, I wonder how Mandarin is translated into Braille.
Because it's not a phonetic written language.
Yeah. Well, I looked this up, and the way it works is that the Chinese Braille represents the sounds of language rather than the many Chinese characters that would be involved in traditional written Chinese language. It's a little bit different. Each symbol contains three Braille letters, initial, final, and then something representing the tone.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's kind of like pinyin Braille, you know, in which Mandarin Chinese is rendered in Western characters.
Like transliterated script.
Exactly.
Now, I mentioned the slate and the stylus earlier, and that's an important tool for writing in Braille because it helps guide the writer in order to punch out the letters to form the code they're creating and helps keep the letters evenly spaced and along the same line.
And again, so much easier than trying to then create embossed letters on paper.
Yeah, exactly. And so as for this invention, I was just thinking about how we sort of alluded to this earlier, but I think it's important to think about how Braille was not the first attempt to create a reading and writing system for the blind and visually impaired. Before this, you had things like the embossed alphabetic letters of Valentin Huy. You had the night writing of Barbier, and these inventions were not worthless. But despite the efforts of these inventors, they weren't nearly as useful or efficient as they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it took the insights of Louis Braille himself to streamline the code system to its optimal form. And I can't help but think that this must have something to do with the fact that Braille himself was a blind reader with direct personal experience of the day-to-day issues faced by blind readers, understanding sort of the texture of the experience, what it's like to read with one's fingers, and having no other choice but to read with his fingers. And so he was able to imagine improvements in the system that others didn't. And this sort of reminds me of something that often seems true about invention, that the insights that often lead to the best inventions are not always just rooted in things like engineering genius and creativity. They also are rooted in habitual familiarity with the kinds of problems that the invention is needed to solve, like hands-on experience.
Yeah, and really the Braille, even if we go back to the roots in night writing, like that was rooted in an attempt to solve a problem that the innovator had a real world experience with. And granted, it was a military situation, but then this technology is passed on to Braille, who has a direct experience of the sightless world and uses his familiarity with this, you know, altered sensory experience to create Braille. And this is the system we have today. Like, this is still the standard for written language for the blind.
Yes, though we should mention that since then there have been other types of encoding written language for the blind. Like, there are One thing I've been reading about is that, for example, there are other systems for people who became blind later in life and were more used to the alphabetic language, that's something a little bit more like the old Hui system, right? It's got like embossed letters. There are also versions that attempt to sort of like mingle the two, where you sort of like make letters out of raised dots. And that's designed to be useful so that, like, if you are a blind writer, you can use that to – it might be slower going but can produce a script that's also readable to people who only know, like, the sighted alphabet.
Right. And then Braille has continued to evolve over time, first of all, to meet new language demands. We mentioned the Mandarin example. But another great example is Nemeth Braille, a form of Braille developed in 1952 by American mathematician and inventor Abraham Nemeth, who was, by the way, born blind. And it was officially integrated into United English Braille in 1992, and it is used to write mathematics in Braille.
Hmm.
There's also the Gardner Salinas Braille codes created to codify math and scientific notation, and there's also the Braille Code of Chemical Notation from 1997.
Hmm.
So we've seen this sort of continual broadening of the system as the system has needed to explain and express different systems, different written systems, in addition to just sort of core written language needs.
Now, of course, there are continuing challenges in adapting Braille technology. I mean, one thing that might be rather obvious is the idea that a lot of the text we encounter today happens not in printed text but on screens.
That's right. Yeah. So we've seen we have seen some amazing breakthroughs though with refreshable Braille displays.
Mm-hmm.
These provide access to information on a computer screen by electronically raising and lowering different combinations of pins in Braille cells, and this is the kind of pricey technology. The price of Braille displays range from $3,500 to $15,000 depending on the number of characters displayed.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole history of Braille writing machines and Braille printers. Frank Haven Hall presented the first Braille writer machine in 1892, and various improvements came with time. Today, we even have Braille computer printers, portable Braille note-taking devices, and then the Braille displays that we've already mentioned. But Braille printers range from, say, small-scale Braille printers that cost between $1,800 and $5,000 to large-volume ones that can cost between $10,000 and $80,000. But the technology exists. You can hook a printer up to a machine and print in Braille if you have the right technology. Another bit of technology worth noting, the Braille wristwatch, where you lift the lid of the timepiece to, quote unquote, touch the time.
This makes me wonder about a question that I don't know if we can really fully answer, though we might be able to say a little bit about it, is the question of how the experience of reading is different, or is it different when you're reading with eyes versus reading with your fingers.
I was wondering about this as well because it's, I guess my experience in this is limited, but just thinking about the differences between reading written text and, say, listening to an audiobook.
Yeah, it's a very different experience.
It's a different experience. Yeah, you can still, ultimately, I guess if you have to like drive home, like, well, what are the differences between reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe versus listening to it in the car.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the same story, still has the same characters, but there is something different about the experience. It's a different way of absorbing the content.
Yeah.
And I wonder what those differences are like with Braille versus these other means.
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily go like full Marshall McLuhan, but I do believe that like the physical substrates of our media do play a role in shaping thought in culture and the nature of the experience of the information that gets shared on that media. So if printed text is one medium and Braille is another, is that experience of reading one versus the other substantially different? And in terms of the internal sensation of reading one versus the other, I don't know what the answer is. I was trying to read around on this and I couldn't find much on the subject, though maybe there's good stuff out there. I did come across a study in Current Biology from the year 2011 by Reich, Zved, Cohen, and Amedi called A Ventral Visual Stream Reading Center Independent of Visual Experience. Mm. And so what the authors of this study, it was a neuroscience study where they did an fMRI experiment on measuring brain function while people were reading across different media. And the author said that there's this pathway in the brain that is thought to be important for reading visual text, and it's called the visual word form area, or the VWFA. And the authors write, quote, "This study investigated which area plays the role of the VWFA in the blind. One would expect this area to be at either parietal or bilateral occipital cortex, reflecting the tactile nature of the task and cross-modal plasticity, respectively." So they're thinking that, okay, if somebody's reading with their fingers, they would expect the parts of the brain involved to be like parts of the brain that are normally associated with touch sensation. Mm-hmm. But the authors used fMRI to see what brain activity looks like when blind readers read in Braille. And what they found was, quote, "striking anatomical consistency within and between blind and sighted readers." And so the authors, this led them to propose that the visual word form area is not necessarily about visual words. Instead, it's, quote, "a metamodal reading area that develops specialization for reading regardless of visual experience." Hmm. So that's fascinating. Like, if they're correct about this, it means that there's sort of a suite of brain functions that are used specifically for consuming symbolic representations of language, whether that symbolic representation is visual seeing of letters or tactile feeling of dot cells. And the authors say that this they believe supports the model that brain areas are, quote, "task machines, not sensory machines." Mm. But that's really interesting. Again, if they're correct, it suggests that there's something deeper about reading that is more fundamental than visual processing. Reading isn't just about seeing. There's something in the brain that is the reading function that's deeper than seeing.
And that's really, when you get down to it, like, that's what Braille does. It, like, it gets straight to that process.
Yeah.
And cuts out the complexities of just trying to take this existing visual system and make it readable by the blind.
You know, another way that I think Braille is really interesting in technology history is it is absolutely not a case where the delay in the invention of Braille was caused by some lack of technology, right? It wasn't that we didn't have electricity or didn't have X, Y, or Z that allowed us to produce this technology. It was really just a lack of people turning their attention toward this task and putting resources into it.
Right. There was a certain level of cultural advancement that needed to be in place.
Yeah.
Cultural values that needed to be in place. I also think there's a case to be made for just sort of the shrinking of the world, you know, the growing of populations, and then also the way that communities of the blind could be brought together to, in cases like this, begin to solve problems that they faced individually, that they faced as a group, you know?
Right. Because there's a school for the blind, there's a place for Charles Barbier to go with his night riding invention and say, I think this might be useful.
Exactly. And then a place for an individual like Braille to rise to prominence.
Yes.
Now, I didn't even go down the sort of sci-fi track here on this, but it does make me wonder if there are any science fiction treatments that explore the possibility of what a written communication system in an inherently blind civilization might consist of, you know? Because we focused on some of the interesting aspects of Braille, in which it is a system by the blind, for the blind.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it stems from a system and a culture of the sighted. One wonders, like, what a purely tactile writing system might have consisted of. Maybe it would be very much like Braille.
Well, there you'd have to wonder again. Either way, language begins as a spoken and heard thing, like it's
right.
Oral.
Yeah.
And so it gets translated into symbolic coding like alphabets and then later like Braille. You didn't have to have the alphabet in between. You could have gone straight from spoken language to Braille, right?
Right.
But it had to start with spoken language there. I wonder, are you asking maybe like if you could have gone straight from an auditory and spoken language to Braille, or a language that is tactile from the beginning?
Yeah, like would it be necessary to, like, we have the alphabet standing between spoken word and Braille, but yeah, what would it be like if there was a more direct line between these two systems? Or would it just be necessary to invent something like the alphabet, some other version of the alphabet to serve as these sort of the translation of these two sensory experiences?
I don't see any inherent reason that would have to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, I find language technology generally fascinating, and I want to continue to return to the idea of language technologies as we go on in this show, because I want to, for example, explore the idea of invented languages. People try to invent languages. Why do these not catch on? How come it's so hard, nigh impossible to really do it?
Oh, yes. I definitely want to come back to this, because you have invented languages that sort of have a higher or more noble purpose, and then you have fictional languages of the likes of Klingon, which is still a linguistic system created, with all the hallmarks of an actual language. It can be learned. It can be spoken. So, I'd love to come back and discuss that. So much of that is, not being a linguist myself, the concept is kind of foreign to me. Like, for instance, when I think of J.R.R. Tolkien, it's easy to think, I'm totally behind the idea of setting down and creating an entire world of monsters and magic. But then the idea of setting down and also creating an entire language for one of the peoples or numerous species in the given world, that just sounds like way too much work for me. But then again, I'm not a linguist.
Maybe creating languages is one of those things, kind of like playing a musical instrument. Like, it's not really fun until you're good enough to do it,
Yeah.
Like, it seems not fun to you because you wouldn't know where to start. But if you were a linguist and you had all kinds of ideas about the roots of language and how words are formed and all that, maybe then it's just a blast.
One thing I would love to explore in this hypothetical episode on fictional languages is if one had to choose. So, an alien species comes down, dominates the Earth, and says, "All right, all these existing languages that you're using, they're all garbage. We're getting rid of all of them. You guys get to vote on which language you're all going to use, but it can only be a language that was developed exclusively for a film or TV show." Like, which one is Na'vi better than Klingon?
Dothraki.
Is Dothraki, like, what is the most robust and useful fictional language system?
The Dothraki have no words, a thought experiment.
Yeah, that's the problem that I feel like we might run into. It's probably Klingon. That's my guess based on some very preliminary research. The Klingon seems to maybe have received the most work, but I could be very wrong on that.
You know, Robert, judging on our history with listener mail, I bet a couple listeners are going to write in with thoughts about this. We're going to receive some opinions.
Well, I hope so. And likewise, I do hope we hear from any listener out there who reads Braille, or anybody who is blind or vision impaired that has some additional insight that they would like to share on this topic.
Yeah, and also if you've had the experience of both reading printed text and reading Braille, do you think that there is a major difference in the experience of reading the two? And if so, what is that difference like?
All right, so we're going to close it off there. But if you want to check out all the episodes of Invention, there are several different ways to do it. You can check out our homepage. That's inventionpod.com. That's where you'll find all the episodes, linked out to some social media accounts as well. And of course, you can find this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you want to help us out, a great thing to do is to, first of all, subscribe to Invention at any of these sources, and then rate and review us if you have the power to do so. That helps us out immensely.
Thanks to Scott Benjamin for research assistance with this episode, and thanks to our awesome audio producer, Tari Harrison. If you would like to get in touch with us directly with feedback about this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, let us know how you found out about the show, where you listen from, and all that stuff, you can email us at contact@inventionpod.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.